And welcome to the Red Leaf RetroCast. 2021 has started. New year. It's the first episode of the new year for the Retro Gaming Podcast. 4-year anniversary. Almost to the day. Colin, Joey, you guys are here to join me for yet another amazing episode.
Hooray!
Say 4-year anniversary, but the biggest thing today is Betty White's birthday.
99. I mean, that is immediately better, yes.
She's 99.
99?
Yes.
No way. Damn. You're lying to me.
Nope.
I'd hit that.
99. She is still 99.
Would you hit that, Colin?
I'd hit you.
Well, I'd definitely hit Joey right now with his new microphone. Very exciting.
Ooh, baby.
So our topic today was chosen by Colin, or a theme, mind you, not topic. Beat 'em ups, part 2. So we're kind of getting to the point. Yeah, I love a good beat 'em up. This was a fun little theme. We did the first one a while ago, but played some good games, played some bad games, played some nothing games.
Yeah. Some real nothing burgers.
So we have a couple topics that Colin wanted to talk about, but more importantly, and more fun, is I promised that the first episode of the new year, we're going to do a little top 10 retro games we covered in 2020. Got the tier list in front of us. We'll be talking about that in a little bit. We're going to be going over our S-ranked games. And then we have to kind of decide what fills out the rest from our A-ranked tier games in the year. So that should be a fun little discussion. What we come up with our top 10 retro games of 2020. We covered a lot of games. A lot of games.
We sure did.
We also covered some shitty games. Let me just remind you guys some of these shitty games we covered in 2020. Home Alone on the NES, Jurassic Park on the Genesis, Tomb Raider, Angel of Darkness, which I beat, by the way.
Can't forget about balls.
I would never forget about your balls, Joey. I mean Balls the Game. Balls the Game, yes. Yes, exactly. Rumble Roses, Cyber Dillo on the 3DO, just to name a few.
I forgot about that game.
Oh, you're probably better off for it. what a year 2020 was. What a shitty year. What a good year, in at least for my life, besides the whole quarantine life. That's the negative to it, but very successful year in terms of podcasting. Keep growing, which is really nice.
I had a pretty good
year too. Yeah, Colin, you got a new job?
Yeah. New license. Which led to the new job.
Yeah, so we I think we all accomplished some. Joey, well, I mean, you got COVID, so that wasn't good.
Yeah, I got the COVID.
Well, now you have a certain amount of immunity to it.
That's true.
I think it goes away after a while.
You would think so, but Megan technically still tests positive.
Oh, wow. Oh, no.
Because her antibodies are still high, so maybe she'll have it forever.
So let's begin with, what games have we been playing the last few weeks? Colin, why don't you start us off? Make this podcast seem normal.
Oh, I have been playing a buttload. And gotten a few, too. I mean, I got, during the Switch holiday sale, I got like 3 more games. There wasn't really much interesting me on the PS4, so I didn't get anything there. But
I also got some Switch games on the holiday sale.
Nice. I got Ease Origin.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to that one. I hear it's fairly short, but that's kind of what I'll need after I'm done with a certain game I'm about to talk about. I got Hades, finally.
Beautiful. Beautiful game.
It's a good game, yes.
And Time Spinner, which you may or may not have heard of.
I'm not familiar with Time Spinner. I'm familiar with Splitters.
Yeah, what is Time Spinner?
Well, it's a new... It's a fairly recent pixel art Metroidvania game that I saw and heard good things about, and it was at a heavily discounted price, so I figured, why not? I'm looking forward to playing that one.
Anything else?
The games I've been... No, that's pretty much it. I looked through all the stuff on PS4, and there wasn't anything that interested me that it didn't already have. So.
Right, yeah, I'm very much the same way.
So, It's time for my bi-weekly CrossCode update.
Bi-weekly. Been a while since our last episode as I move my mic closer to me. There we go.
And guess what, guys? I finally beat it.
Oh, hell yeah. All right, what'd you think of the ending? Was it satisfactory?
Well, that's the thing. I beat the final boss, went through a bunch of ending cutscenes, and then all of a sudden I get hit with a PS4 error message. And I can't continue.
Oh, good. That's like me playing Shadow of the Colossus, and during the ending cutscene, my brother's friend, when I beat it, my brother's friend accidentally tripped those circuit breakers, so it shut everything off.
Oh, no. But it looked like I was actually on track for the bad ending.
Ah.
So I looked up how to get the true ending, and I've since done all the prerequisites, and I'll probably take another run at it in the weeks to come just to see if I still get that error message, which I hope not, but can't tell at this point in time. But let that be a lesson to all of you. If you want this game and if you have the option, get the Switch version or the Xbox One version.
That makes sense.
If you absolutely must have the Steam version, make sure you have a controller, because I hear playing it with a keyboard is really cumbersome. Now, let me tell you, that final boss is a real piece of work. He has like 16 life bars, and he comes in two forms. Like, the first form is like his human-sized form that flies around, does a whack ton of different shit with the four elements you use throughout the game, and in order to be able to do damage, you have to whittle down his outer barrier using projectiles of the opposite element. For example, if he has a fire barrier, shoot ice at him. And then once that's broken, you got to wail on him with melee attacks. But it's not always that simple, since at one point in that form, he has a secondary barrier that you'll need to... an elemental barrier of your own, since you need to melee attack him to be able to do damage. And if you get too close, the elemental barrier he has active will damage you. So you end up having to grab like a temporary item that gives you a temporary barrier against that element. And I could have just made noises with my mouth and that would have made more sense.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, it makes sense when you're actually playing it.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
I believe you. Joey, do you believe him?
No, not at all.
Yeah, probably a liar.
Well, sucks to be you. But then once his half of his life bars are gone, he'll transform into like his final form, which is some giant armored robot elephant thing, which I assume is modeled after the Hindu god Ganesh, or however you pronounce that.
Right, I follow you.
Now you're just making things up.
But thankfully, there's a checkpoint once he transforms, so if you die fighting that form, you don't have to fight his first form again. So, but here, he'll cheat by buffing up his health bar to unbelievable levels, and you'll have to match it by destroying orbs that will increase your attack power so you can take off his health more effectively. And it took a long time, but I finally took him down in the end.
Sounds like my overall trials and tribulations for the Final Fantasy VI boss.
Yeah. Yeah, overall, I'm glad I played this game. The main story itself is honestly kind of weak, and there are a few characters I feel are underused. And the soundtrack is decent, but nothing to write home about. But the gameplay, anime references, puzzles, dialogue, and quirky side quests make up for it. And as an aside, I think I can safely say that our main girl, Lee, is officially my favorite female game protagonist of all time.
At least in this current time.
No, I mean all time.
Oh, okay.
Even more so than Samus Aran.
I don't know. It sounds like some recency bias is happening here.
She's just so damn likable. I mean, she's got a lot of personality to her, even though she's largely silent. And just all the different expressions and different ways she'll mess with the other characters is really fun. And I've also thrown myself back into Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Ah, I thought you beat that already.
Nope.
No?
I although I'm pretty far into it. I mean, the last time I talked about it, I had beaten the giant robot elephant dungeon. And since then, I've beaten the giant robot salamander dungeon on Death Mountain and the giant robot camel in Gerudo Valley.
Okay.
So that's two main dungeons down, or three main dungeons down now. One to go, the giant robot bird.
I really liked that fight. That was really fun. The whole game's just excellent. I really liked Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I found it had kind of a slow start, but once you really get the ball rolling, it's really fun.
I know what you mean. It was very somber, I think the word I would use to describe the opening.
Yeah, and it's also, there's just so much in front of you that it's kind of intimidating to kind of get into it. But if you just keep at it and unlock a few areas and get a lot of the map uncovered, then it's good motivation to keep on going. You just want to keep on finding those shrines, uncovering the Korok seeds to upgrade your weapon and shield and bow storage. There's just a lot to do, and it's fun doing it. And I've beaten the main story of Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory.
And
there it is, right on cue.
Had to. Required.
Of course you do. And I'm happy to say the ending gave me the warm fuzzies I didn't get from Kingdom Hearts 3.
Warm fuzzies, or your pants getting tighter?
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Oh, for you, Colin? Uh-oh. Absolutely.
Or are the boos finally getting to you? You're giving in to the boo. You're accepting the boo. Boo.
You'll be accepting my fist in your face if you don't shut up.
I hear Joey's into fisting.
That doesn't surprise me.
Just on the face.
Just on the face. That's got to be clear. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, but since I didn't go into detail about the mechanics before, I'll do it now. It's just you've got Sora, Donald, and Goofy all running along a track that circles through the respective world and hitting buttons to slay Heartless to the beat of the music. I mean, you use the X, R1, and L1 buttons for regular attacks, and sometimes you have to hit the triangle button to activate a special attack. You'll also use the circle button to jump when prompted.
Mm-hmm.
At which point you'll either dodge an attack, hit the attack button to take out a mid-air enemy, or hold the jump button to glide through musical notes using the analog stick to steer. Sounds complicated, but with practice, it's pretty straightforward. And yeah, most of the game was just a recap of the series, but there were some new story developments at the end that set the stage for the next games, so I'm interested in where that will go. And it served us some nice nostalgia from the earlier games in the series. There were a few songs conspicuously absent that I wish were in there, but I'm happy with what we got.
Right. Well, that's good. I'm glad you as a fan was satisfied. You don't want to go through halfway through a game and then you got to pull out. You don't want any of that.
For sure. But yeah, that's pretty much everything I've been playing.
Boy, Joey, he really no-sold that, didn't he?
Yes. He doesn't like going deep to finish.
A lot of sexual references on the podcast to start off the year. I love it.
Hey, you started it.
I did start it. Do you think I'm going to start something and not end it? Come on.
Oh, yeah. I've also been keeping up with Gingrump's Danganronpa playthrough.
I'm going to interrupt you on that one because I have also been keeping up with that because I'm also playing the game. I'm a little bit ahead of them. Currently,
yeah.
I'm exactly at the point now where I last put it down, and that's chapter when you first find the murder in chapter 4. So,
oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Just don't spoil it for our viewers.
Of course, don't want to spoil a like 10-year-old gamer, however old it is at this point. Would want that.
Yeah, but it doesn't have like the presence in the popular conscious that other games do.
I suppose.
i.e. Final Fantasy VII.
Ah, I get the okay. I get what you're driving at. Okay. Well, all right. Let's move this along. Joey, you're up, buddy.
Oh, yes. I actually haven't really played much games, I guess. I bought Megan a Switch, so she's been playing Animal Crossing. But I also got her the Ring Fit. I know we made fun of it, but that thing actually has a pretty decent workout.
Mm.
So I've been doing that, and I think I'm like level 20-something. For a nice short 15, 20-minute, 30-minute workout, it's actually decent. Good.
That actually reminds me. I downloaded the demo of Fitness Boxing on Switch, so I'm kind of looking forward to trying that out. Ooh, see how that boxing does for exercise.
I got a VR. I got the Quest 2, and one of the games I play a lot is a boxing game, and it makes me so tired. Very tired. It's so tiring. And I also got the pretty much Rick and Morty game. It's made by the same people, but I forget the name. I think it's Trover or something like that.
Yeah, Trover Saves the Universe.
Yeah, so I've been playing that a little bit. So,
but yeah, it's a pretty goofy VR game.
It is very goofy. I haven't really deep dived into any game recently. I've been kind of just looking for something to pick up.
All right, then I'll finish this little section out with... the Patreon officially launched on January 1st for the wrestling podcast.
All right.
Yep. With all the content and the listeners and what they want, the anime and retro gaming is still incredibly popular. It's.
I just saw your tier list for wrestling, and you didn't put Orange Cassidy as number one, so I don't know if I can believe your podcast anymore.
What do you mean tier list for wrestling? I didn't put any tier list out.
I saw a little tier list that you guys had of best wrestler of the year or something like that. You tweeted it or something.
We do rankings over the course of two weeks. Ranking. Yeah. And he was not number one, but he was in the top 20.
Yeah, I know. He's not number one, so I'm going to have to tell people to boycott your podcast until he's number one.
Look, this isn't PWI over here. Maybe if he actually won a title and maybe had a little bit better semi-main and main events, he would have gotten a little higher.
Well, he actually hasn't done anything in a while either.
Yeah, it's probably for the best. You know, kind of make the heart grow fonder kind of situation. But anyways, this is not the wrestling podcast, but I still have to plug everything nonetheless. We did launch a Patreon, Red Leaf Retrocast Patreon. It's very wrestling focused. It is an archival journey through a lot of women's wrestling and some men's. I'm doing a Starcade journey on the $5 tier. My venture brother, if you will, he's from the Big Egg Joshi podcast. He's doing JD Star, early 2000s wrestling retro focus on that. And then we've added a lot of other archival stuff. The main reason is the Joshi 2010s that we launched, which if you want the episode 2 weeks early, then you sign up for the Patreon. If you want to wait until it's free, then you head on over to Big Egg Joshi Podcast after 2 weeks, and the episode will be up there for free. Now, unfortunately, the Modern Game Cast with... I did mention this before. It has come to an end. The hosts that were involved, it's the third straight year of a new host. So that has come to an end. It's just a lot of extra work that, especially with the new ventures, and it's very much decreased in popularity. But nonetheless, for those that still want some modern game content, I'm going to change it up the format quite a lot to just an episode on the $1.50 tier of the Patreon, just to kind of throw things out there for the people that do pay for that. That are only in that kind of section. If you're, of course, in the $5, you'll get everything. So, and that kind of transitions into an episode I want to put out sooner rather than later, is the game I did beat over the last few weeks, Death Stranding.
All right.
Yes. I beat...
Do tell.
I wanted to beat 50 games in the year 2020. I got to 48. So I got damn close. Very close. Death Stranding ended up taking up a lot of time. I didn't beat it before the end of the year, but then that would have only been 49 to begin with. I thought about, man, if I could just beat a couple shitty NES games, I could make 50, but kind of wasn't worth it. But nonetheless, I got to 48. It was very, very much worthwhile. Looked at all the games I beat. I was very satisfied. So yeah, I beat Death Stranding. I picked it back up, familiarized with the story again, watched some Let's Plays to catch up in the story where I was at, and then it took another like 20 hours to beat. I wasn't even close, apparently. Yeah, it was ridiculous. So I want to kind of look at a lot of the lore, read more into it with a lot of those documents that you get. I did create a save file right before I beat the game so I can kind of go through that, make my own opinion over the lore to it all, and kind of dive deep into breaking down what that is and what a lot of the gameplay negatives, positives to it. I want to have fun with these perspectives on a lot of these games I'll be playing going forward, and it's going to be kind of anime focused, it seems, because I am playing Danganronpa. I do want to finish Phoenix Wright. So a lot of these will be serial based, I feel. Danganronpa, I think I'm definitely going to play the second one when I'm done with the first one. Put an episode there on the Patreon. The same goes for Phoenix Wright, since I did like when we covered it on the Retro Gaming Podcast, so that was fun. It was a B-tier ranked game. Yeah. I definitely want to do these things. Persona 3 is definitely on that list of something I want to make a special episode to, because I really want to go into the Persona series. I'm really in this mood where I want to play these story-focused games, some RPGs. So I my goal is to have at least one episode a month dedicated to these sorts of games. It's all my free time, and it's something I want to give the listeners that, of course, pay for this stuff. So yeah.
Well, let me know when you're doing certain games. So if I've played it, I'd like to jump in and add my two cents.
Absolutely. I if you want to be involved in the Death Stranding one for fun, you're more than welcome to do it. At the very least, Kay wants to be involved in all this as well. He's the one I do the Patreon with. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
cool.
That yeah, a lot, and all the Patreon money goes to supporting the archival, acquiring a lot of these archival wrestling shows that you just can't get on services. You have to go through tape trading through Japan and a lot of things. So all the money goes through there.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So like, we got to get a certain tournament from Japan called Catch the Wave, and it's like, I think it's like a $30 DVD or something. It's three sets. It's the only way you could get it. It's pretty wild. So that's sort of the examples of what you would be supporting. And because no one covers this, and it's kind of lost the time, a lot of these matches that you just don't find or are easily attainable, I kind of throw some of these matches up on Daily Motion in kind of low-end quality and throw it out on there, Red Leaf Retrocast, so you can see these matches that are... Mostly, I'm just kind of taking it from other YouTube and Daily Motion sites to making a playlist, so that you can find. So making it a kind of a one-stop shop situation, since obviously none of us own the rights to it all. So that's what I've been doing. Been playing through Danganronpa, nice. Phoenix Wright, and I beat Death Stranding, and that's about it. So let me get a drop ready, and we can go through your little topics, Colin. How about that?
Sounds good to me.
Alrighty. Colin, you got a couple fun topics, and we'll just kind of bleed this into our top retro games of the year 2020 that we played. So first topic, Colin, what you got?
Which would you rather hear first, Top Hat Studios or EA?
Let's do EA. I think a lot more people are interested in that one, personally.
Yeah, whet everybody's appetites. So, amazing news. Disney has ended the Star Wars exclusivity deal with EA.
You want to try that word again, Colin?
Exclusivity?
There you go.
Yeah. So now EA is no longer the only company that can make Star Wars games now. And I've also heard that Ubisoft... as a result of that, is working on an open world Star Wars game as we speak. Not sure I.
Yeah, they would.
Not sure how I feel about that one, but but rejoice, fellow gamers and Star Wars fans, for the Titan hath been slain to a certain extent. I mean, even though it's a relatively small victory, I will enjoy every last drop of Schadenfreude I can get from EA losing out on Star Wars money.
Dude, look at you breaking out the German word here.
Seemed to fit the best.
Do you know what that word means, translated into English?
I don't know the exact translation, but I think it's like catharsis, pleasure at someone else's suffering.
Yes.
Or deserved suffering.
Right, right. Yeah, that's exactly what it translates to. It's not like a singular word. There's a lot of words like that in German that you have to break it down and it creates almost a sentence in English.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's to take pleasure in someone else's negative reaction to something. Yeah.
Yeah. For EA, it's well deserved.
No, they absolutely deserve all of this. They pumped out shitty games. They pumped out high end games with a lot of industry poor tactics, to say the least, with the loot boxes and the such. I mean, their most successful game was pretty broken in itself, and that was the Star Wars Dark Souls knockoff that you can kind of spam shit. What? I am still of the mind that that game isn't as great as people say it is, but it is a fun game nonetheless, and that's coming from a non-Star Wars fan. But yeah, Ubisoft, yeah, open world for a Star Wars game. I think we can know what to expect from that. Ubisoft formula, tower, go to a tower, unlock an area, rinse and repeat kind of situation.
But don't they also do loot boxes? Or like skins and shit?
They sure do, Joey.
So that's not going to change. It's just going from one shitty company to another.
Yeah, I expect a little RPG element here where you can upgrade your character and shit through a separate menu, much like the Assassin's Creed series has gone. I will say I have seen less of it in the last couple iterations of Ubisoft games. They are still doing it, though, nonetheless.
Yeah, I think last Assassin's Creed I played was, I think, Origins, and then you could buy, like, random ass horses that don't even fit with the game.
Oh yeah, like yeah, there was a ton of that in Origins. In Odyssey, it was even worse when it came out, and I was very vocal about it, where they stunted your character's level growth, where it basically wanted to force you to buy EXP to level your character up. I was so pissed off at playing the game when that came out. They fixed that mostly like a year later. And then I got it. Then I bought the game myself.
But if I could be Darth Vader,
heavily discounted past.
If I can beat Darth Vader and ride a unicorn, I think I'll buy a Ubisoft game. And I'll pay for it. I'll pay $50 for the damn horse to be Darth Vader on a unicorn.
That's what it's going to take for Joey to buy the game. You heard him, Ubisoft. Get on that. All right. Topic two, Colin?
Yes. Now, some of you may have heard that a certain developer called Top Hat Studios have recently come out with a game called Sense, a cyberpunk ghost story.
Sounds fun.
And for whatever reason, they came under fire. They came under fire from Twitter. Twitter Puritans.
Twitter wanted to cancel them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll read a few of their what they said to them.
Ooh,
right,
juicy.
Here. Yeah. One says, "Rot in hell, absolutely sick, you feel okay encouraging rape and violence against women and children, misogynistic dogs."
Oh my god.
Or, "Sick, sick, sick, twisted, hope you enjoy the coming legal action." And last of all, "I don't think Nintendo are going to be happy to learn incel fantasies are being thrown out on their platform. Everyone in my network is letting them know. You're going to feel really stupid when they pull the rug out from under you." And there are a lot more just like that. Now you might be wondering, what horrible thing did they do to deserve all this negative press? I'll tell you what, viewers. They made female characters with big boobs. I am not making this up.
How disgusting. No man on this planet likes a girl with big boobs, especially anime girls with big boobs. Disgusting tactics. I can't believe they would resort to such things. Cancel them, indeed.
Yeah.
Now, may I point to that there are certain Japanese wrestlers that people have doing fan art of them as anime girls with big boobs. So you know you've made it as a wrestler when you get fan art of you with big boobs.
Yeah. Now you might be thinking that Top Hat Studios cowered in fear and issued an apology for their horrible behavior, right? Hell no. They gave them the biggest middle finger ever with a with this response, which I will read word for word because this needs to be heard.
I'm looking up this game on the eShop right now.
Yeah. So here's their official statement. Quote, "With the recent news of Sense, a cyberpunk story coming to Nintendo Switch, we are aware of a large amount of messages and demands aimed toward the game's console platform release based on lies, claims that it is explicitly, quote, pornographic, or somehow, quote, encourages violence, or most ridiculously, somehow, quote, breaks the law. Furthermore, voices have attempted to advocate making sale of the game untenable through demanding harsh censorship aimed towards the developer's art style, with threats to, quote, review bomb the game and or harass its distributors. In addition, we have received death threats from those who feel threatened by what essentially boils down to an aesthetic decision of how pixels are arranged on a screen. While disappointed at these behaviors, we are certainly not surprised. Let us be clear on this. We will not censor the game because of self-centered crowds who care solely about grandstanding. We categorically and absolutely refuse to restrict creative expression. Creators should be allowed freedom to express themselves, particularly when it is an expression of the subcultures they have been immersed in. As a cyberpunk game, Sense uses imagery and themes relating to a future of hyper-commercialized, over-commodified imagery as part of its cyberpunk theme and inspiration. This is reflected in all character designs. With that said, we expect that this is lost on those attacking the developer for being, quote, harmful and somehow inflicting, quote, violence and pain. Those who believe words or images inflict violence should perhaps stop spurting their own hateful, false rhetoric and also cease condoning death threats to those they disagree with. We reject any and all of the aforementioned brazen characterizations of the game and would like to reiterate our principles against tampering with creators' expressions. We would also like to reiterate this game is rated ESRB/PEGI 18.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an AO game, nor have any, quote, laws been broken, as some social media commenters have ridiculously claimed out of their biases. The game's rating reflects the target audience, and yet this fact is lost on those who have been led by a will to blindly crusade against their false perceptions.
And they really went into detail on this.
Yeah. Once again, Sense, a Cyberpunk Story is rated ESRBM/PEGI 18. The game will release as planned and without censorship on the 7th of January 2021 for the Nintendo Switch. It can be pre-ordered and pre-loaded now on the Nintendo eShop. The game has passed QA on other platforms and release dates are being decided. The game will not be censored. We categorically refuse. End quote.
Good for them. Good for them. This game actually looks quite interesting too.
But yeah, even, yeah, I already bought it myself.
Doesn't Nintendo already censor games anyway?
Yes.
Aren't they really strict? So
yes. No, you're thinking of Sony.
Well, Sony does as well, and it's also releasing on the PS4.
Nintendo's been a lot less strict about censorship in recent years, for ironically enough.
Look, if the Nintendo Switch can pump out the Senran Kagura games, this game seems up their alley.
Exactly.
Well, fuck, just because of that, I'm going to buy this game right now. I'm going to support this game. I'm going to support their freedom.
Absolutely.
And it looks very interesting, and it's getting decent. It seems to be along the Monkey Island point-and-click adventure game, so I'm very much all about that.
Yeah.
You guys are going to feel so silly when it turns out that they did this all themselves just to get publicity.
Ooh. Might be onto something.
Even if that's true, if this becomes successful, it'll encourage other developers to stand up and say, fuck you, Twitter.
Yeah. I guess big boobs are bad.
Yeah.
Big boobs bad. You can't be having that. I'll buy this later. I'm in the middle of a podcast. But they are definitely getting my money. Game looks interesting. And I do love that when... Because Twitter rage is not a real thing. Like, Twitter isn't as big as people think it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And cancel culture on Twitter is incredibly toxic.
Uh-huh.
Wait. You're telling me every time I get angry at any sports team I watch and I yell at them on Twitter, it does nothing?
Joey, I hate to break it to you, but that only works for the Cleveland Browns.
Here I thought I was trying to make a change and I was doing nothing.
It also only works for the wrestling world, apparently, since wrestling is so into social media these days, but that's a topic for another time. So yeah, if you guys are like us and you want to support this game, it's only $20. It's not a heavy deal. It has very good. It's a point and click adventure game, it seems, in the terms of Monkey Island, which I'm all about. And when a company does something like this, they stick to their guns. They see Twitter for what it is. I'm supporting them. And $20 is not a huge investment for an indie company, I feel.
Hats off to you, Top Hat Studios. No pun intended.
No kidding. It'll be my first new game purchase of the new year. And my trials of trying to get a PS5 continues. I still don't have one. I guess Sony doesn't want it to. I do have a funny story, though.
Do you?
So I was in GameStop the other day because I'm like, okay, do I want to pre-order Hitman 3? It's like, why would I pre-order this game if I don't even have the platform I want to play it on yet? I guess I'll wait and it'll go down in price, whatever. So then I'm in the store, I'm looking around, I was like, is there a 3DS game I want? I did get one that I can't wait to talk about on the podcast here because it is related to one of the games we're covering for the theme. So I go, are you guys like getting a PS5 in like blindly, like tomorrow or something? Because actually GameStop here is doing a blind online launch to help stop bots and scalpers and whatnot. And they're only releasing bundles. So it'll come with, comes with two games, right? So you're spending $800, two controllers, two games, and the console. Ridiculous, right? And they're also invoking that if you bring any of those items in that are in the bundle, GameStop will not take them in for trade to prevent further scalping. I go, okay, this isn't the worst idea in the world, but you're still forcing me to spend $300 more at your store. So for shits and giggles, I go, okay, when is this happening? She goes, supposedly it's happening at 3 o'clock. Or, I'm sorry, 4 o'clock. So it was 3:50, I'm in the store. I was like, all right, I'll wait 10 minutes, whatever. I'll look around. I'm online on my phone, ready to hit the button for cart and checkout. 4 o'clock on the dot. Oh, look, it launched. Bang. In the cart. Sold out. I go, there's your shitty prevention right there. So, still no PS5. Very infuriating for fans. Supposedly, Sony's spent the last couple months ramping up production. Xbox is a little better because it's made in the country of the United States. It's not overseas or anything, and they have better access to the parts, but they're still having a lot of issues. So it's literally just have to get lucky. It kind of sucks still. There's my story.
Did you hear that sales of the PS5 in Japan are the lowest of any PlayStation console?
Yeah, well, production has a lot to do with it.
Well, it's also I think it's also the fact that Sony seems to be gearing its games more towards a Western audience nowadays, specifically.
I don't really get that feeling.
They seem to be, I don't know, I've just been hearing over the years, they've been giving less and less of a shit about the Japanese audience.
Well, it is a much smaller pool than the United States and Europe and South America and the like.
Yeah, but Sony's a Japanese company.
Well, I mean, It's a bigger pool audience to gear from. I mean, they're still putting out all these Atlus and anime games, and I guess Nintendo's doing a better job of that currently in its landscape, but the Switch has been out for a couple years now, so.
I guess it's
something to just keep an eye on.
But Sony seems to be imposing a lot of global standards on what games can be made for their platform, so I think people in Japan are a little pretty miffed about that.
I think there's going to be a lot of games that come out over time that will. I mean, the PS4 was super successful for a reason. So, and I don't see Xbox hitting the Japanese market anytime soon. Let's be honest.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
That's always been a Western aim thing.
Yeah. All right. Any comments, Joey?
Nah, I got nothing. I don't think the PS5 exists.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't. I think it's fake as well. No way. No way it exists. I do want Hitman 3 really bad, and there's some other games coming out. Let me see. I have some written down here. Let's see. The Medium, that's coming out on PC and Xbox only. Ease 9 is coming out. Bravely Default 2, but that's for the Switch. Returnal, has my attention. So that's all I got to say for that. Let's play the Final Fantasy battle music, and we can get to our top retro games of the year 2020 that we played. There we go. I played a little extra drop in there too at the end. Having fun on this podcast. So, we got the whole tier list in front of us, boys. We have 7 games that made the S rank tier. And we have what it looks like. Let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 24 games that made the A tier rank. So we're going to have to pick 3 from the A tier that will go 8, 9, 10. And then get our top 7 from there. So, just looking at the A tier list, I think we all just pick one game that we think should get to the top 10. Make it simple. What do you think?
There's so many A tier games I want to pick.
I know. I don't know. I think we should just discuss this and see.
Okay.
And what if I disagree on some of the S tiers?
Well, the S tier is a non-debatable top 10. I'm sorry, I hate to break it to you, but that was a complete cast agreement on that. How it got there.
Well, screw you too, then.
Yeah, definitely screw you. I vote for Beyond Good and Evil to make it into the top 10.
Yeah, let me think. I'm a little undecided between Incredible Hulk and Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
I was thinking Spider-Man and Spyro.
Hmm. So we all have different picks. All have different ones. Well, I wasn't crazy about Zombie Ate My Neighbors, as we discussed on the podcast, especially considering it was extremely difficult once you got to the worm stage in the mine, and none of us were able to get past that, if memory serves.
Yeah, it's more like I didn't have time, but... Yeah, there's just so many good ones. So hard to pick.
What were your picks, Colin?
There's Incredible Hulk, Ultimate Destruction, Zombies Ate Your Neighbors, but I also liked Spider-Man 2, Panzer Dragoon Saga, and Sly 2.
Yeah, so we got fun. Radiant Silver Gun, Castlevania Circle of the Moon, Ninja Spirits, Monster World 4, Sly 2, Donkey Kong Country, Metal Slug, Silent Hill, Myst, Shinobi 3, Sly 3, Sonic 3, Final Fantasy 8, Tekken 3, an Atari game, Dungeons and Dragons, or whatever that was, Crusader of Senti, Panzer Dragoon Saga, and Alundra. So, I'll give you guys either Spider-Man or Hulk, but I won't take both, since I'm not a big fan of those universes.
I think Spider-Man's better.
I'll just lean towards Spider-Man on this one.
All right, so Spider-Man's making it into the top 10. And since that was the first game we decided on, I think that goes number 7. Disagreement?
That's fine.
Don't you mean number 8? There's like 7 in the
S. I'm sorry, number 8. That's what
he's
I meant.
He's gotten that one in the S's, so we got space.
So number 8 for Spider-Man. I can go with Spyro, Year of the Dragon. I can see that. Colin, complaints? Disagreement?
I don't know if I can say much, having not really played much Spyro.
Ooh. But. So do you veto and it goes in?
Yes.
Okay. Number 9 has been decided. Spyro. And our last one. Make your case, boys. I'm still going Beyond Good and Evil.
The two I wanted are in there, so
Joey got his wish.
I want to hear you guys' games.
Yeah, sure, I'll agree with Beyond Good and Evil.
Beyond Good and Evil has that it's almost like a lot of modern games took the formula of what Beyond Good and Evil was able to do with a strong protagonist, a deep story, and excellent game mechanics.
Yeah.
So Beyond Good and Evil gets 10.
It's a little bit on the short side, but...
it can't fault the game for being short.
Yeah.
I thought it was like... Wasn't it still like 10 hours or something? Not that short.
Slightly less? I don't know. I can't remember.
All right, so Beyond Good and Evil 10, Spyro Year of the Dragon 9, Spooderman, the game on the PS2 gets number 8. All right, so... Our 1 through 7 S-ranked games that qualified over the course of the year. This is kind of in order and when we covered it on the year. Bloody Wolf, Metroid, Doom, Twisted Metal Black, Soul Calibur 2, Max Payne, and Earthbound. What game pops out the least on that list to you guys? For me, it's Metroid.
For me, it's Blood Wolf.
For me, it's Twisted Metal.
Well, we all got different picks. Okay. Bloody Wolf, why do you say that, Joey?
I think that might have been the only game on there that I didn't give S myself.
I see. Yeah, because I think Kevin was still on the cast at that time.
Yeah, he was a big pusher for that one.
Yeah, that's a big TurboGrafx-16 game. That was our first S-ranked game we made for the year of 2020. Why do you say Twisted Metal Black, Colin?
I don't know that I was really big into Twisted Metal altogether. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a good game. I get that. I mean, I gave it an A when we covered it. I don't know. I don't know if it hit enough of the right notes for me.
Okay. Do you think it's any worse or less appealing than, say, Metroid or Soul Calibur 2? Or do you think Metroid at the time was so innovative that it should be higher?
Well, when I picked it, I was playing Zero Mission, so I don't know that I can speak on that, but I think I'm leaning more towards Metroid being lower on the tier than Twisted Metal.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I think about it,
I can agree with that one being the lowest.
Joey, could you lean into your mic more? You're a little bit.
I can. There you go. Sorry. I can agree that one being the lowest.
All right, so that makes Metroid 7. Let's see. I think for the sixth position, I will go with Soul Calibur 2. That's my vote.
Mm. I'll probably say Bloody Wolf.
Bloody Wolf, we're still sticking to that. Joey, agree?
Yeah, I agree with Bloody Wolf. All right,
I won't argue. Bloody Wolf gets number 6. All right. I'm sticking with Soul Calibur 2.
I'll agree on that for 5.
I can agree with that.
Solid point. Okay. This is where I'd put Metroid then. Number 4.
But I thought we did Metroid last.
Did we? Oh, yeah, we did. We did. My bad.
Yeah, number 7.
Yeah, 7, 6 Bloody Wolf, 5 Soul Calibur 2. So that leaves Max Payne, Doom, Twisted Metal Black, and Earthbound. Since we mentioned Twisted Metal Black...
Yeah, I was going to say put Twisted Metal Black here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Doom, Max Payne, Earthbound.
Hmm.
I'll probably put Max Payne.
Yeah, I'll agree on that.
All right. This is easier than I thought. Doom or Earthbound? 1-2.
Nah, this one's going to be hard.
See, I think with... Obviously, Doom's still around to this day. I think it was so innovative and made a genre of its own. It made first-person shooters matter. I think Doom's number 1, just on that alone.
Yeah, but I think we all really liked Earthbound.
We all did really like Earthbound.
Yeah.
So are we going with our personal choice as Earthbound 1? Or are we going with how it impacted the industry as one?
I think Earthbound did both. I mean, it was gave us a good time to play, and it had a fair amount of influence on modern games. I mean, if it weren't for Earthbound, we wouldn't have Undertale.
That's true. So it does spark a lot of spiritual successors in gaming. I say fuck it, Earthbound 1.
Yeah.
All right, so correct me if I'm wrong. We got Earthbound 1, Doom 2, Max Payne 3, Twisted Metal Black 4, Soul Calibur 2, 5, Bloody Wolf 6, Metroid 7, Spider-Man 8, Spyro Year of the Dragon 9, and what was 10? Beyond Good and Evil.
Beyond Good and Evil.
There you go. So there's our top 10 retro games of the year, 2020. What a fun year.
All right.
Yeah. Fun year. I don't know if we'll be able to get another 7 S ranks this year.
I think we could pull it off. We'll see. But that was fun. I really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed that. So if you guys disagree, you can look at redleafretrocast.blogspot.com to see the full tier ranking. It's on the site under retro gaming tab. You can see kind of the progression of how many games were added over time, see how many games made the B rank, C rank, and that oh so terrible 3DO section of the DNF that we got there. So there you go. I will play the next drop and we can move on
before we do that. What is the worst game that we have? There's 11 to choose from. We don't got to do top 10 worst ones, but we can do the worst.
I say it's Doom on the 3DO.
I'd say Home Alone.
Home Alone was atrocious. That was atrocious game.
At least 3DO Doom had a good soundtrack. Home Alone has nothing redeeming about it.
Are we in agreement Home Alone?
I agree. Home Alone. Yeah.
Home Alone. Okay. Home Alone's the worst game we played last year on the NES. All righty. Oh, boy. Let's see.
How about Mega Man?
Well, I already played it. I thought about Mega Man for you, Colin. I thought about it. All right, so this is your theme pick, Colin. Tell us why you picked it, and then go into your first game of choice.
Well, I do like a good beat 'em up, and there was one game in particular I wanted to cover, and from that there was another one from my childhood that I also wanted to cover, and I figured it'd be fun to revisit this genre since we had so much fun with it the first time around. I mean, we covered games like Turtles in Time and Golden Axe and I forget what else. There's a bunch of others, including the Sailor Moon one. That was an interesting time.
Oh, man.
Oh, Final Fight. That one was great.
Until we got a game on here that's like Final Fight. We'll get into that one.
And Streets of Rage.
Yeah.
Can't forget Streets of Rage. But yeah, I picked a couple of games that I thought were interesting and or nostalgic. So let's not waste any more time. Get right into it. First game I picked is Guardian Heroes on the Sega Saturn. Developed by Treasure and published by Sega.
Fuck yeah, Treasure's back, baby. One of my favorite developers.
Damn right. They're rock solid. Most of the time. And yeah, developed by Treasure, published by Sega, released on the Sega Saturn in Japan on January 26th, 1996, in North America on March 1996, and in the PAL regions on June 1996. And it was later re-released on Xbox Live Arcade on October 12th, 2011.
A couple of these games that we covered. Was re-released on Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Radiant Silver Gun and Ikaruga are just such an example.
Mm-hmm.
Examples. Now, the reason I picked this one is because after getting my Switch and perusing EB Games' shelves for games, I noticed Code of Princess X on the shelf. Caught my eye initially for the most obvious reason, that being the main female character wearing probably the skimpiest chainmail bikini you've ever seen.
You disgusting degenerate. Go on.
Yes, just like Top Hat Games. But yeah, What also caught my eye was that the art style on the cover was identical to 999, 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors, my second favorite game of all time.
Right.
And I later watched some YouTube reviews to see if it was worth getting, and from there I found out it was inspired by Guardian Heroes. And from the footage of that game, I was intrigued, until I found out it was a Sega Saturn game, and I don't have one of those. But then I found out it's also on Xbox Live Arcade, so bought it, downloaded it onto my 360, and now I'm ready to cover it. Did you play it on Sega Saturn, JD?
So yes, I because the game is quite expensive. I've wanted to play Guardian Heroes for a long time. It's been on my Sega Saturn list. So went to the went to the Etsy store, got my shitty little copy there made. It came in well after Christmas, so I just did get this game in on time, and that's how I played it. Nice little Sega Saturn. Got a little boot up here.
Nice. Yeah, so the plot is surprisingly complicated for a game like this. It involves our main characters finding a legendary sword that revives an ancient warrior as a skeleton in armor so he can join the group. There's also a high-ranking knight.
Really
captain
reminded me of Medieval's plot in a funny way.
Yeah. Yeah, a high-ranking knight captain joins because the royalty has been infiltrated by an evil sorcerer who we later find out was a middleman in an ancient war between two divine species, and oh no, I've gone cross-eyed.
Don't blame you there.
And a sequel does exist on the Game Boy Advance, but it got pretty lackluster reviews. Now, the best way to describe this game is it's an RPG beat-em-up with some fighting game mechanics.
Did you say this game got lackluster reviews?
The sequel did on Game Boy Advance.
The sequel, okay.
This one got pretty good reviews.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I say fighting game mechanics because the characters each have a moveset with certain button prompts that you can use to pull off big combos. I thought that was a pretty cool addition since I don't recall many, if any, other beat-em-ups doing similar. But they really should. It would really spice up the gameplay.
Yes. Yes. Imagine a Streets of Rage game with certain button combinations to pull off different attacks.
That would be super cool.
Yeah.
And you can also jump between three planes to fight.
I want to talk about that because that was my least favorite thing about the game. I thought it really slowed the pace down having to jump between the planes, because they do it like it's a platform where it hovers for a little bit, then you can get to that plane, and sometimes the depth perception wasn't quite there in certain sections. This really bothered me, despite the game being very solid, and I love the button combinations as well. So that jumping between the three planes really threw me off for quite a while until I got used to it, but I still thought it, for a beat-em-up with such a higher pace with those button combinations to keep you in it, having to go through those planes just didn't hit right with me.
Yeah. Fair enough. I did like that the story has branching paths.
Yes,
it creates a lot of replay value, and some paths have higher level enemies than others, so you'll start to see which paths you're at the appropriate level for and which ones will kick the shit out of you. And some paths will reveal certain things about the story that you don't find out in other paths. So uncovering the lore is another reason to keep replaying through it. And there's like a bunch of different characters to choose from, each with different styles. Like one guy is like an armored knight with a big sword, mainly focused on melee. And then another guy is a mage with a staff who mainly focuses on speed and magic and all that, and you get the idea.
Yeah, it created those branching paths is a great idea for a beat-em-up. It creates a lot of replayability value.
Yeah.
And I think my favorite, one of my favorite additions in this game is the karma meter. So if you kill civilians and certain enemies, it changes the karma meter depending on that. So that's really cool. So you get a little different ending from there, is my understanding. I wasn't able to beat this game. It got a little tough at the end. But
yeah,
But yeah, it was.
I did two playthroughs.
You did two playthroughs? Wow.
Yeah, one each with a different character. I didn't have a ton of time, at least during the weekends. Ironically enough, since we had such a long break.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I do like the experience points you gain throughout there, so you can upgrade your attributes. I think health, strength, etc. kind of speaks for itself. Really, yeah, yeah. Really simple. A lot of really simple systems that just really worked for me. Joey, what do you think about Guardian Heroes?
I actually liked it. I'm not a big fan of beat-em-ups, outside of playing them in arcades. I think they generally get boring, but I thought this one looked nice. I liked the music, although I think it was a bit too loud. But I don't know. It was a fun game. The visuals were awesome. The attacking was nice, although the yelling every time they attacked did get a little annoying. Like, I get it. You're swinging a sword. Can we please stop yelling? But... But yeah, no, this actually was surprisingly a lot of fun. I didn't think it was going to be fun.
Yeah, this game is considered a cult classic to this day.
For sure.
That's why it's very expensive still. Actually, I should pull up the price. I mean, it's beat 'em up, so they're usually... like, you can beat these games in like an hour or so, depending. That's the wrong site. My bad.
Yeah, one thing that may make or break the game for some is that it's a single-player game.
Yeah. I mean,
since most beat-em-ups are designed to be played with multiple people in co-op mode, this might be a sticking point, but not for me.
Yeah, so there's a lot of dialogue in the game, so I do recommend trying to get this game in English. The Japanese version, if you're interested, goes for $25, much more affordable, while the English version goes for $80 loose. So it is not a cheap endeavor for Guardian Heroes. I love this game so much that I immediately went out and bought Code of Princess on the 3DS.
Nice.
Yeah, get it. I got that game used for like $15. Very much worth it. I'm probably gonna pop that in at some point. Give that a try. I'm very much into the style. It's made by the same guy. I believe it's also made by the same composer of the music in this game. And you can get an enhanced port on the Switch, but it's like $40. I'm like, I don't know if I want that. So got it for the 3DS. I'm looking forward to it. Code of Princess, Guardian Heroes, good stuff. Good stuff indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. One complaint I have is that the controls can be a bit stiff. I mean, I played on the Xbox Live version, so maybe it's the controller I'm using, but moving around felt a little bit slow.
No, it is definitely wacky.
And it's hard to get your character to jump diagonally. And sometimes there's a lot going on screen. Like, there's a big group of enemies in one place. You can barely tell where you are or what plane you're on or whether you're winning or getting the shit kicked out of you.
Yeah, that goes into my issues with the plane jumping. Yeah.
And that's another thing. You get stun-locked by certain enemies really easily. Gets pretty frustrating when you're low on health, but have a lot of magic left, yet you can't even use it while you're getting barraged with lightning or projectiles. It can be a bit of a bad time there. But
yeah, that's a common beat 'em up complaint, though, is the stun lock. You just gotta get good enough to avoid getting stun locked, basically. But there's a certain game we play, well, that is just unavoidable at times. That's a problem.
Yeah. But overall, I give this a pass.
I also pass this.
I pass it as well.
All right. Next game, Colin.
All right. Next game is Kung Fu on the NES, also known as Kung Fu Master in the arcades and other ports such as the Commodore 64, which is actually the version I played as a kid. Now, it was developed and published by Nintendo, although for the arcade version, it was a company called IREM. Released in arcades in Japan on December 1984 and later ported to the NES on October 18th, 1985 in North America. And like I said, it also had ports on several other systems, including the Commodore 64. And apparently there's actually going to be a remake on the Intellivision Amico. Another reason to consider getting one alongside the new Earthworm Jim game.
Ah.
Now, incidentally, in Japan, the game was released as Spartan X, and it was meant to be a tie-in to a Jackie Chan movie called Wheels on Meals. but apparently had no similarity to the plot, and in turn made licensing a lot easier. Now, upon further research, I actually found out this is the first ever beat-em-up video game.
Really?
Oh, fortuitous. Yeah. I was pretty surprised to learn that.
I didn't know that little fact.
Yeah, we're going true retro now.
Yeah, I guess so.
Going for origin. A series origin. Or, actually, no, this wasn't a series. A genre origin. That's what I meant to say. Yeah. The premise is pretty simple. Our main character's girlfriend has been kidnapped, and he must fight his way through 5 levels of enemies to rescue her. And the gameplay is pretty simple. Walk along a single plane and punch/kick whatever enemies come your way. Sometimes you'll see special orbs floating around that you'll need to destroy to get past, and sometimes they'll release an animal or just explode. And not much more to say there. You just have enemies coming at you from both directions, and you gotta time your hits right, Now, punches don't have as much reach as kicks, but you'll get more points from them. So,
oh, interesting. Okay, floor, so that's the purpose. Because I was very frustrated with the punching. I found it pretty much useless. I was just going through kicking everything the whole time.
Yeah, when you're playing it on Commodore, kick is the only attack you have.
Down kick, but I think that's kick. All you need.
Yeah, right? Yeah, down kick for the little elf troll people that can kind of grab onto your shin.
Are they elf trolls? Yeah. I thought they were kids. I was like, why the hell are we beating up kids?
Yeah, they could be little people.
Like some crazy 80s Bruce Lee movie.
Yeah.
I'm going to say they're kids because I'd rather beat up kids.
Wow. Hello, FBI?
That's funny. This game's fine. Yeah. I mean, knowing that it's the first ever beat-em-up and what it was able to accomplish, and I thought its gameplay was quite addictive. Yeah, I mean, the color palettes, I think, could have been better. It was just too matte everywhere, matte colors. That's probably my only complaint. Yeah, you know, when you put it in your head that this came out in the mid-80s, I think it's totally fine for what it was. I don't have any true complaints over the game. Maybe some button combinations would have been better, but I don't know if they were even that far in development at this point in the mid-80s for the game. So that's my thoughts over Kung Fu. Yeah. Reminded me of more Bruce Lee than Jackie Chan, that's for sure.
I thought it was boring.
Reminded me too. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the stair sound I thought was terrible. I didn't like the music. Like, I just thought it was boring. It just wasn't fun. I think maybe it might be more fun as an arcade, but on a console, I don't think it works.
I mean, I played this on the NES, so it was totally acceptable. I don't think it's going to blow anyone out of the water in hindsight, that's for sure. Especially with all the other beat-em-ups that have come out since then.
Yeah. Yeah, that... One thing I should mention, the fourth floor is a real piece of work. It's like, yeah, these moth things coming out of square holes.
Oh, yeah,
in the
fuck
walls.
That. That's where I stopped playing.
Yeah, I think if it weren't for save states, I would have given up right then and there. But yeah, they're a lot harder to hit than any other enemies you come across.
All right, let me ask you this. What is with beat 'em ups all having the same trope plot of the girlfriend stolen by the enemy and you have to go save her? Like every beat 'em up game is a damsel in distress.
Because they're man's game.
It's a man's game.
Like, save them, women. Beat people up along the way.
There's the true beat 'em up game. It's all those famous 80s action stars, and all their girlfriends have been stolen at the same time by the same dude. So you got like you got Steven Seagal, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Sylvester Stallone. Who's a fourth guy we can name?
Schwarzenegger.
All four of those, their girlfriends have been stolen. They team up for the ultimate beat 'em up of saving the women's.
Should make a Duke Nukem beat 'em up.
Duke Nukem beat 'em up, where it's all that.
Yeah, I could see that.
I could get a woman anytime, but you stole mine for the night. You're going down, buddy.
Yeah, I don't think Streets of Rage had had a damsel in distress plot.
Yes, they did, Colin.
Did they?
I think they did.
I know Final Fight did.
Oh, absolutely they did. I guess the police chief's daughter is in trouble.
Mayor's daughter.
The mayor's daughter, yeah, whatever it might be.
But the mayor happens to be a retired wrestler, and he's still just as jacked as he was before.
Of course he was. Okay.
Yeah, and much like Ghosts and Goblins, this game does the arcade thing of having your ending not really be an ending, and you start all over with all your points.
Yeah,
the difficulty just keeps going up.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a moment in the game where you can exploit like the bigger enemies / bosses. What you do is you don't kill the knife throwing guy that's behind you, and you just duck his knife throws until you get to the that boss or big dude, and then pretty much kills him in one shot or a couple. So you can do that. All right, I'll pass Kung Fu, but it's not gonna blow my socks off.
Yeah, I give it a pass too. I mean, for the very first beat 'em up game, I'd say it was pretty good.
I'm a fail it. I think unless you play in an arcade, which just like the next game we'll talk about, I don't think it's worth it. So I'm gonna fail.
Joey laying down the law. I like that. Got the balls. How much does this game go for these days? Kung Fu. Kung Fu goes for an NES cart. Kung Fu Kid, what is this? $7. Very much affordable. Is it worth $7 to you, Joey?
No.
Okay. I think it's worth $7.
Maybe $7 and quarters when you're having fun at an arcade, but...
Okay. All right. I like that answer. I can get behind that answer.
Cool.
Okay. Joey, your pick, sir.
Yes, my pick. Simpsons Arcade Game, which came out on the Commodore 64 and DOS, and of course the arcade machine, which I think is the only way to play it, but came out 91 for everything.
Yep.
And then was released for Xbox Live Arcade or whatever that's called, 2012.
XBLA is the acronym for it, so.
Yeah, so Konami published and developed with, I guess, some people doing some ports. So, this game is terrible.
You think so?
Really? I think so, on the Commodore, at least.
Oh, well,
and
yes.
DOS version. Like, arcade, I love this game. You find it in an arcade room, you play it, it's fun. But I don't think it works as a port.
That I can't disagree with. I thought it was very shaky, controls were terrible, but the arcade version, dude, do I have memories of being at West Houston Bowl in Houston, Texas, growing up. This arcade game was there right next to the Mortal Kombat machines. This was super fun. I played it in the bowling alley all the time, and I'm not even a big Simpsons fan, but this game was awesome on the arcade. So,
which is why I picked it. I thought, okay, it was great on the arcade. Maybe it'll be fine with the ports, but no, it doesn't translate.
Definitely not. Many would agree with you.
Yeah.
It felt so slow. The hit detection was terrible. The artwork just seemed to get worse. I don't know. It just, nothing was fun about it.
So I played primarily as Marge with her vacuum attack. Had some of that range, made the game a little bit easier. Playing as Bart on the skateboard was infuriating with the way he moves. My favorite boss was easily the bowling ball in the black and white little world. I think that goes without saying.
Yeah, Homer was hard. His punches, even though it hit the enemy, never looked like it actually hit the enemy. So it just, yeah.
Hit detection with Homer was atrocious.
Oh, yeah.
Although he can pick up Bart and do co-op attacks with him.
He can do that. That's very appropriate, though, for the show.
Which is why I really like it as an arcade. Getting a couple people doing combo attacks, like, fun.
Yeah, like if you... combine Homer and Marge, they'll roll around like a boulder.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's funny. Okay, Joey, what about the plot of this so-called game? It's got a kind of fun plot, I think.
Does it? Does it really?
Yeah, I thought it was good enough for what it needs to be. A damsel in distress, but baby.
Yeah,
it Baby makes Damsel.
Sense. Yeah, I mean, it's the same as everything. Hey, someone, go get this person. Beat up everyone along your way. Oh, and walk on top of buildings because you have to.
Well, yeah. So the plot. I'll say the plot.
Okay.
Smithers is robbing a like jewelry store bank situation. He stole a large diamond. Collides with the Simpsons characters. Diamond goes flying in the air, lands in Maggie's mouth. Maggie, the baby, of course, Smithers kidnaps her because the pacifier is now the diamond. So the rest of the Simpsons go across the city fighting all the enemies to reach the final level at the power plant, the nuclear power plant that Homer works at. There's eight stages, strong boss characters. I love the boss fights in this. I thought that, you know, you fight a bear, a bowling ball, all the sorts. I pretty much stopped after the bowling ball. So that's where I kind of reached my peak and I go, okay, I'm satisfied. Because I tried playing a MS-DOS version and it was garbage. So then I got a MAME ROM, and that's when the game just really reached a good level. So I don't know how we're going to tier rank this. I think we'll go with the arcade version.
Yeah, that's the only one worth playing, it seems.
Right, yeah. I think the DOS and C64 versions are kind of like F and D rank, like immediately.
Ah, yeah.
They're
just super unplayable. But the XBLA, the MAME, is super fun. I have a lot of nostalgia for this game as well, and I think it holds up to this day. There are some, like we mentioned, there are some character issues, but you can... If you play with more than one person, those character issues kind of disappear with the co-op attack you can do with them all. But yeah, did you guys play as Marge mostly? I don't think I heard you answer that.
I only watched like a YouTube video of a playthrough of the arcade version.
Oh.
It seemed to play a lot like Turtles in Time.
Yes, it absolutely does. Just
makes sense. They're both
slower.
Konami games.
Yeah, it's just a lot slower comparatively.
Yeah, but the co-op attacks are what set it apart, among other things.
Yeah, I just try to play a little bit with each character. But I think Marge is probably the most fun.
Yeah. Well, I passed the arcade version, fail the ports.
I agree.
Agreed.
All right. On to my pick, and then I'll go over Kay's ghost pick. Kay is from the wrestling podcast. He kind of picks our fifth game for us. So my pick was called Riot Zone, is the English version. The Japanese version is Crest of the Wolf on the TurboGrafx-16.
It's Crest of Wolf. No, the.
Oh, really? Is that correct?
Yeah, there's no the.
That's what
Crest
I saw.
Of Crest of Wolf. Oh my god, you're right. Disgusting. I'm disgusted with myself. How dare I?
You fail at life. Turn the podcast over to me. I'm the only one who can run it competently now.
Okay. So this game is quite expensive on the Turbo Duo. It is a duo game. That means it's the CD version. It goes for, like $100 minimum. You can get the Japanese version for like $50-$60, I believe. So significantly cheaper. Yeah. It was available on the Wii Virtual Console. I still have that, so I did buy it then. The setting takes place in developed by Agenda, published by Hudson Soft. So there's your answer there. Came out in February 1993. In the beginning, the setting takes place in New York City, where two men known as Hawk and Tony met up with their chief, Jim Hyde, and told him they finally forced a villain known as Boss Man to stay in a place called the Dragon Zone. So absurd.
Wow.
The chief advised Hawk not to enter Dragon Zone and head back home, but Hawk refused to do so before he immediately began traveling towards Danger Zone to try to demolish it in order to save a girl named Candy. Hot chick, by the way. Tony told Hawk that he will join him. This game does not have co-op, a gross error by the makers of this game. How could it be? How could you have a single player that's totally ripped off of Final Fight to be single player? I don't know. And I will say, Boss Man, there's your WWF wrestler reference. Hawk was exactly like Hawk from from the Legion of Doom / Road Warriors. So there are a lot of wrestling references in this game, and it's it is exactly Final Fight. It plays exactly like it, albeit a little bit slower, and the walk cycles were kind of wonky. You do have you have a special attack like Streets of Rage where it takes a health away from you. You do gain points at a good enough rate where you get extra lives, so you are pretty much able to beat this thing in one sitting. The difficulty is not all the way there. It's got your typical stage boss at the end of the stage, then you move on to the next one. I thought the sprite work was very good. I liked the basics of the moves, much like a Streets of Rage or Final Fight. Is this game going to rock your socks off? I don't think so. I think there's too many better games out there that do a little bit more innovation for a beat-em-up. Now, is this a bad game? I don't think so. So that's my really quick review over Riot Zone.
I think this is, like, if you think beat-em-up, this is the game. Like, it's just what a beat-em-up is.
Yes.
Like, they're like, hey, we need to beat him up, right? Let's get a tough guy. Let's walk around the streets, damned in distress, do the music, the generic fall sound. We got a game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what we got.
But it works.
It does work. It does work.
Yeah, it's nothing you would... Nothing...
Colin, you still there, buddy?
You wouldn't see from the original Double Dragon, but... Hello? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like the music and the graphics. But again, gameplay's pretty basic for a beat-em-up. But the hits seem pretty satisfying, which is an absolute must.
The dude walks funny.
Hello?
Yes. Yes. No, you're still here, Colin. Don't you worry. Unless you can't hear us.
Okay.
Yeah, I literally have nothing else to say about this game. It is so basic. I can tell you right now, it gets a C tier. Like, no questions asked. It's not bad. It's not good. It exists, and it's fine.
I don't know. His funny walk is good enough for me to be a little above C.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm actually offended
it's just
that...
Just a soft pass for me.
Yeah. Okay. I'm actually offended that Hawk isn't the guy with the mohawk hair. That's my...
Yeah, that'd
be two on the nose.
Two on the nose? Know. Yeah.
You gotta leave a little suspense.
Okay. Alright, our last game is from Kay. I'll go over this one for everybody. It is called WWF Betrayal on the Game Boy Color.
What the fuck is this game?
Oh my god. Developed by WayForward. A fucking good developer for some reason, but it's published by THQ. Came out in August 2001. This game is horrid. The game's plot is based on a 1999 shitty storyline out of WWF where Stephanie McMahon is kidnapped. Vince McMahon promises any of the characters you choose, whether it's Stone Cold, The Rock, Triple H, or The Undertaker, who were the top four guys in the company in 99. Promises a title shot if you rescue the daughter. And spoiler, it plays out exactly how the storyline in the WWF plays out, where Vince actually kidnapped his own daughter, which is bullshit. It's fucking stupid.
The Ministry of Darkness. That was one of the best storylines going on, though.
No. Well, yeah. And then it ended in shitty, convoluted bullshit fashion. Because it's...
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, of course. WWF never fails.
But the Ministry of Darkness and the fight with whatever the group Ken Shamrock and McFoley were in. Corporation was the corporation. Were they part of the corporation originally?
They were at one time, yes.
They became the corporate ministry, but those four guys were left out. And I think Ken Shamrock was the one that saved Stephanie in this story, if I remember correctly.
I don't know. I remember Triple H kidnapping Stephanie himself.
Austin got her down off the cross thing.
Yes, 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 yes. And then they tried to crucify Austin. The Undertaker is Biker Taker in this game. He is not Ministry Taker.
And that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, he was... I did like that they have kind of chiptune music for their entrance music. That was kind of funny. But if you played Double Dragon on the NES, that's kind of what this game is, except worse. the stun locking in this game is so atrocious that if you get hit by an enemy, you are immediately stun locked and you don't recover fast enough where you can punch back. There's a vent scene where there's like smoke coming out of it. If you get hit by one, you're dead. So that's a lot of instances of this game. The hit detection's kind of wonky. The sprites are very basic. There's matte colors sprites everywhere. Suck. The sprites
nobody
suck.
Has a neck. There's no necks.
Yeah. What you do, it's very basic punch kick, and you what happens is you get a little bar that fills up to, I think it's 5, and when that bar fills up, the enemy, you can initiate their finisher. So Stone Cold's got the stunner, which looks more like a diamond cutter. Undertaker's got a sit-out power bomb, which is incorrect, or choke slam. Rock's got a rock bottom, which looks like he hugs a guy and falls down, so that's kind of funny.
Triple H, that's what it was. Yeah. I thought it was just a power slam or something.
Right, yeah, it's supposed to be the rock bottom, but it looks like he just hugs the dude and they fall. So, yeah, that's the game ends with you on a roof and you beat up one of the other 4 guys that are there. So if you're Stone Cold, The Rock, or Triple H, or Undertaker, you're fighting Triple H, because of course he kidnaps Stephanie and marries her. Which is funny because they actually reference that he has to be bribed to save his wife, which is kind of funny. There's also an instance in, I believe it was 2000, where the Undertaker, or was that 2001? Whichever year it was, where Undertaker actually kidnaps Stephanie, where it goes, where to, Stephanie, if you remember your wrestling history there and storylines. So a lot of this kind of bleeds together in a weird, weird game. So.
Did you think The Rock looked like Razor Ramon?
Now that you mention it, he could have been Scott Hall, yes.
That's what I thought. I was like, oh, that's The Rock. Okay. All right. The only way I knew that is because he keeps saying The Rock every time he talks.
Right. Yeah, he refers to himself in the third person to the game. At least that's true to form.
It is, but he didn't like do it all the time when he talked. But it seems like every sentence he's like, The Rock.
I will say the dialogue and insults that the game made is just as bad as WWF scripted promos. Like, The Rock responds to Vince McMahon's pleas to rescue his daughter. He's like, that pooty poo woman. I was like, what the fuck insult is that? It's like spooty poo or something. It was bad. It was horrid. So.
Yeah, like when Austin breaks up The Rock's title chance. Like, it doesn't sound like Austin when he's talking. He's like, I'm going to stop you. Like, it just felt terrible. The opening was just hilarious.
Yeah. The game is $10, so it's, I think that's overpriced for it. I see the PAL version is $3. That's probably a better price point for it. Colin, Mr. Not Wrestling Fan, what did you think of this terrible wrestling game?
Yeah, my thoughts pretty much reflect yours, at least as far as gameplay is concerned. I will say the character animations are fairly fluid, but aside from animations and graphics, there's really not much to this game. It's not even as good as Double Dragon.
No. You know you could beat this game in 30 minutes?
Yeah, I watched a playthrough on YouTube, and the guys actually beat it in less than that.
Oh, wow.
It was just super dull to watch. I mean, that seems to be a trend with a lot of WayForward games. They have decent graphics and above average music, but when it comes to gameplay, it's just dull as dishwater, at least most of the time. The only game of theirs that seems to get consistent praise is Shantae and the Pirate's Curse.
The Shantae games are a lot of fun. I pretty much like them all. The latest Shantae release didn't meet the standard, but I found out later that it was a mobile port to console. So I'm like, okay, I guess I can give it a little bit more leeway in that instance. But still, I think they should have upgraded that game for console a lot more. So.
Makes sense.
Did we all fail WWF Betrayal, much like the modern WWE product?
Yes. Definitely fail.
Fail.
Our first easy fail of the year. A WWF game, how appropriate. Okay. So, our 5 games were Guardian Heroes on the Sega Saturn, Kung Fu NES, Simpsons arcade game on the Commodore 64, Riot Zone on the TurboGrafx-16 and WWF Betrayal on the Game Boy Color. I will start. Guardian Heroes, I give an A. Kung Fu, I give a... I'm going to go a little bit harsh on it, but I'll give it a C. I think in I think just over time it hasn't aged quite as well, but it's still solid. Gets a C. C is not a bad score by any means. Simpsons arcade game, we already discussed. The arcade, I give an A. But this is a console cast. I give the Commodore 64 version an F. Riot Zone, that gets a C. Very basics, but nothing wrong with it. And WWF Betrayal, I also give an F. So, boom. I'm harsh and pretty okay on this cast. Joey, what you got for me, buddy?
Wait, what's your favorite and least favorite?
My favorite was Guardian Heroes. And my least favorite was WWF Betrayal.
I agree with favorite and least favorite. Because I'm not considering Simpsons Arcade on it, just the console Commodore version. Guardians, I also give an A. I thought that was a lot of fun. Kung Fu, I'm going to give it a D.
Ooh.
I don't think it's worth it.
Big time harshness.
Simpsons arcade game. If we're talking the actual arcade, I would give it an S, but since we're talking the ports, F.
You're same mind as me, basically.
Crest the Wolf, I'm going to give it a B, actually. I thought it was fun. I know it's generic, but the way he walks, I think it's funny, and I don't know, if you want to beat him up, there's a beat him up for you. And then, WWF Betrayal is an F. I felt like I got betrayed having to play that game.
I like that response. Colin, you're up, buddy. Your topic, your theme.
All right. My favorite is Guardian Heroes, and least favorite, WWF Betrayal.
Across the board.
And for tiers, I give Guardian Heroes an A, Kung Fu a B. Maybe I just wasn't as harsh on it since I was using save states.
That's totally fine. Totally fine.
And I played it as a kid, so I may have a bit of bias there. I give Simpsons Arcade. The arcade version obviously gets an A, and from what I've heard, the rest of the ports get F across the board. Crest of Wolf / Riot Zone gets a C. And WWF Betrayal gets a D.
All right, so that gives overall Guardian Heroes an A C for Kung Fu, Simpsons solid F, Riot Zone gets a C as well, and Betrayal gets an F. Majority rule kind of situation. All right, our next podcast is Joey's theme pick, Rail Shooters. So we will be back in 2 weeks. And I think it's very appropriate. One of those games is Pokemon Snap. So there's your teaser. Can't wait. And we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye now.